Hey, folks, join us on May 16th, Friday night, at IO West on Hollywood Boulevard for Shotgun Story Worthy.
It's an all play, so everybody that comes down can spin that wheel and tell a true one-minute story on the topic they land.
Yeah, and not only that, it's free, and it's happy hour out in the bar. What do you want from us,
people? What do you want from us? Shotgun Story Worthy this Friday night, May 16th at 7 o'clock, IO West in Hollywood.
Hollywood!
This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy. Don't let someone steal your great idea. Register a domain name now and put your idea online. GoDaddy's offering OneNew or Transfer.com for the low price of $2.95. So whether you're building your dream business or starting a website for fun, visit GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY295 at checkout. Some limitations apply. See website for details. Don't forget, you guys, visit GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY295 at checkout, and you are supporting this podcast.
You're listening to Storyworthy, and your guest is Ed Krasnick. I've known Ed for a long time, and he made a beach movie called How to Stuff a Wild Emotion. It's a musical, and it's not well thought of, but brilliant.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finning. We are at one of my favorite places in the whole world, Ma Fisher's Diner in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on Farwell Avenue, right down the street, right down the block, actually, from the Oriental Theater.
All right, let's talk about the menu.
Oh, it's run by real Greeks. You know, the rest of the country don't realize that out here in L.A., diners are not run by Greek people, which means that their Greek food is iffy. But, like, if you get a Euro in a diner in Milwaukee or Chicago or St. Louis or New York or Philadelphia, it's a Euro. It's fantastic. I know you call them gyros because you're, you know,
well, just because
Pittsburgh.
I see it written that way. I know it's wrong. Gyro is not, it's hero. Euro.
Euro.
Okay, so that's your comfort food?
You gotta have that's one of them. They have fantastic pancakes. This is one of the diners that's been around since the 20s. It's an old house, and it keeps expanding out, and it's my favorite diner in Milwaukee.
And it's a Greek diner.
It's not a Greek diner. It's run by Greeks. Therefore, there's out of their enormous menu, one whole page is Greek stuff.
All right.
Then there's a bunch of bratwurst, then there's a bunch of eggs.
Well, you guys, today's show is right up Hannes' alley. The title of tonight's show is Comfort Food. And that title is brought to us from Ed Krasnick. Ed Krasnick, a writer, an Emmy Award-winning writer, I should mention.
That's true.
And so now we're here.
And he's so fat. You can see by looking at him all the comfort food that he eats.
He's enormous. Hey, listen, now there's been psychological studies done talking about comfort foods and how they're consumed to positively, you know, pique your emotions and to relieve negative feelings.
That's exactly why I am the size I am today.
Okay, now it says,
I don't do drugs. I do food.
Now, I looked it up and I read here. It says males prefer warm, hearty, meal-related comfort foods like steak, casseroles, stuff like that. Whereas females, we prefer more snack-related things like chocolate and ice cream.
True. Well, I think it's not that it's snack-related. I think it's sugar-related. I think women do respond positivity, especially chocolate. But it's like, yeah, women respond to sugar and men have a savory thing.
You know what I respond to?
Money.
Chicken pot pie.
See, that's more masculine.
I don't care. I got that going on, man.
No, that's a good one.
The testosterone in my heart is all about chicken pot pie.
Yeah, because you got to have the flaky crust along with the soft inside. You can't just have you should have a nice bowl of soup. And I'm like, you should go fuck yourself. Okay, that may be a little extreme. But I'm saying soup is like part of a meal. I can't just eat a bowl of liquid with an occasional chunk of something. I'm not chewing enough.
I
need to chew.
Chicken pot pie,
the perfect compromise.
Yeah, chicken pot pie is a nice compromise there. Now, comfort food consumption has been seen, it's like a response, like we said, to emotional stress, but it's also consequently a key factor in the obesity rate in the United States.
It is a problem. I think what I've read mostly is like, The problem is, like it used to be, people used to eat smaller amounts of food, first of all, and the food was less horrifying. Like if you had a chicken pot pie in 1925, chances are they killed the chicken that morning.
Right.
And made the dough and took the vegetables out of the garden, and there's somebody in a diner somewhere on the roadside. It's like that was a fresh piece of food. It wasn't bad for you to eat a chicken pot pie in 1925. Now it's so full of chemicals and processing and all that shit.
If you get a frozen chicken pot pie like a Stouffer's or something, you won't even be able to read any of the ingredients.
Yeah, you don't recognize them.
Perhaps three of the ingredients you could read.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all processed.
And it's just, yeah. So that's the thing is we're eating stuff that didn't used to qualify as food.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Now, when males consume comfort foods, they get positive emotions. When women consume comfort foods, they have negative emotions. In other words, we mostly feel the guilt. But men, they're pretty happy about a big old belly full of food.
Well, neither men or women see themselves realistically, but women are always negative. Like a beautiful woman can stand naked in front of a mirror and she will find the one thing that is not quite. There'll be like one thing like her ear. There's like a little mole up near her
ear. Your eyebrows aren't plucked.
Yeah, your eyebrows will be uneven or something.
Well,
and she'll be like, oh my God.
Right.
Whereas a fat man will look in a mirror and be like, ladies.
Yeah, he's like, I look just like I did in college.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Put away your uncircumcised penis. I'm sorry. Oh,
it
I went
is
too far.
Too much. It's too much. Now,
you're either turtleneck or you're a mushroom, guys. That's what I say.
The younger folks, they go for the snacks. And another comparison, the younger folks go for snacks. Older people over the age of 55 go more for the savory.
But that's just because we can afford it. It's like,
young people would like to eat
some more, but they can't afford it. So
well,
they got a dollar.
A lot of times young kids are eating right from vending machines. So if it has a shelf life of like forever, like a Twinkie put a Twinkie on a table, it'll remain there on the table. In 20 years, the Twinkie is still sitting there in complete form on the table.
Yes, exactly. It will not disintegrate.
And so if you're eating that way, of course it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, exactly, because your insides are just, you know, filled with goop. So this is why you need to go to a real diner run by Greeks. I cannot emphasize the Greeks enough.
Okay, Hannah, so let me ask you, I have it written down right here in front of me. What do you think are the biggest comfort foods in the United States of America?
Donuts?
No.
Oh, I was going to give you a list. Okay.
No,
okay,
I'm asking you. Tell me.
Okay,
tell me what you think.
Donuts is a no?
No, it's not on there.
Okay, donuts is not on there. Burgers.
Burgers, yes.
Fries.
Fries, yes.
I want to say hot dogs, but I'm not sure. Hot dogs?
What did we hold up in the picture?
Oh, mac and cheese.
Mac
That's
and
right.
cheese is the number one comfort food. Also, baked beans, clam chowder. What?
Anything.
Apple pie, meatloaf, pot roast.
Pot roast. There's something that nobody makes. I like pot roast okay. Like once a year, I'll be at a diner somewhere and I'll order the pot roast because you never see it.
Right.
But it's very limited. You got to be in a real pot roasty mood for that to be worth it.
When I was a little girl, if I came home from school and I saw on the kitchen counter, like the counter top would be very clean, but there would just be the crock pot sitting out and there would be, you know, smoke coming out of it and it's wafting and that is a pot roast in there, right?
Yeah.
And then I say to myself, well, I guess I'm not eating dinner. Like, because I detested pot roast. I still do. Like
really?
the cooked carrots and the cooked things on the bottom. And then it's
okay,
all in one.
Okay, so I'm with you on that because I don't like cooked carrots because I like raw carrots. I like to eat a carrot. But it's like it gets soft and disgusting.
Yes.
It's like you could just drink a carrot through a straw, and that's not right.
This is fascinating podcasting.
This, you know what the kids enjoy? Some good crock pot information. That's what moves the needle on this kind of, you know, there's deviant sex and crock pot information.
Okay, let me tell you.
These are the two categories.
What the comfort foods in Australia and New Zealand are. Are you ready to hear about these comfort foods?
Kangaroo penis?
These folks, I had kangaroo tail once. Did I tell you that?
Kangaroo tail?
Yeah, you eat the tail of the kangaroo. It was in Australia.
Okay.
I had kangaroo tail. You know what it tastes like?
Chicken.
There you go.
Okay. Do you kill the kangaroo? You just cut it off like a lizard and it grows it back?
You just cut it off. It grows right back.
Okay.
All right, you guys. Down under, they're liking the sausage and mash.
See, I was going to say sausage would be more. That's because they were close British. To England. Bangers and mash. So, England, right. By the way, bangers, horrible sausages, in case you didn't know.
Right. So also down under, they're eating a steak and kidney pie, also very British.
Yeah.
They like braised lamb shanks.
I could go for a braised lamb shank.
I would not eat any lamb, let alone
you don't
a
like
shank.
Lamb at all? Oh, no wonder you don't like euros.
Or pronounce lamb. The whole idea of a baby lamb. I don't care. I don't want to eat that thing. I don't want to eat
Why?
A baby lamb.
Why? Because it's too cute?
Yeah, it's too cute. It's a small animal, and I don't want to eat that.
Okay. So chicken you'll eat because they're disgusting.
Yeah, because chickens don't know any better.
Chickens. Cows are idiots. The thing is, pigs are very intelligent, and I feel bad because I really like pork. But pigs are very intelligent and very sociable. And yes, they can be in slop.
I do love bacon. Yeah, I'm such a hypocrite when it comes to food. I'm such a hypocrite because I'll eat bacon in a heartbeat, but I don't want to eat a baby lamb. I don't want to eat baby veal either. It's not a veal. That's not the animal. It's a
no. Veal is a type of it's like a baby cow
that they force into a crate or something.
Well, you know, they somebody once said it's like it's got its own apartment.
Oh my gosh!
It's just it doesn't move around. They don't let it move around so it doesn't get tough,
and, then they
and that's
kill
why
it in
it's
like
so tender.
8 weeks. It's so horrible,
right? And it is horrible. But
animals.
Is it actually more horrible than allowing it to grow another 8 weeks, walk around
yes,
in a field,
yes.
and then kill it?
Yes, it is more horrible because if you can stand and walk around and turn and lay down and eat some grass, that's a much better life.
Have you seen cows do that? They're idiots.
Also, let's talk about what they like to eat in Britain, which is very similar to Australia.
Yes.
Here's what they like, and I used to date a guy in England, so I know. He liked the Cornish pasty.
Yes, which
pasty.
Those are the versions of that. Yeah, which is basically a chicken pot pie that you can hold in your hand.
Right, right. Like or a steak, a kidney pie, or a cottage or shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
Also, fish and chips. That's very popular.
Fish and chips are the, they got a lot of blood sausage. They got some weird shit.
They eat something called mushy peas.
Ew. Yeah, see, all their peas are disgusting. I remember when I've been to England.
Yeah.
And here's what's the thing. I had breakfast in England once with like there were workmen. It was like a local place. I was like, I want to go where the locals go. And I ordered the typical English breakfast, which was a plate of French fries covered in baked beans.
Yeah, always baked beans.
Fried green tomatoes. Sorry, just fried tomatoes. Not, you know, and one fried egg on top.
And that's an English breakfast.
That was breakfast. Are you out of your mind?
Yeah. Here's the kind of pudding they like to eat in Britain. Here's one called spotted dick.
Yeah.
What the hell is that? Spotted dick pudding.
It's a bread pudding, and it's got raisins in it, hence the spots. Ugh. Why it's called spotted dick, I don't know.
Then they like sticky toffee pudding, bread and butter pudding,
okay,
jam roly-poly.
Are you sure these all aren't, you didn't go on porno sites in England?
Maybe also, in Britain, they eat those scotch eggs. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
like
I do.
It's a hard-boiled egg.
Hard-boiled egg covered in sausage and deep-fried.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. You just shut up. They're fantastic. Let me tell you something. We're in my fishes right now. We're going to go down the street to the Landmark Lanes, which is a place that has three bowling alleys and three full bars. It's an enormous place. It's in the basement of the building, and we're going to have a scotch egg. That's what we're going to do right now.
Here's one more thing I wanted to mention they like to eat in Britain, and that's something called toad in the hole.
A toad in the hole. Is that an egg inside the toast?
Now, we call that a bird's nest at my house.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what the toad in the hole is?
I thought that was, but apparently I'm wrong.
All of our British fans out there, why don't you email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com and let us know what a toad in the hole
is. Yeah, and we won't come back until we have the answer.
You know where we have a lot of fans, Hannes?
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. for sure, but also the other countries in other countries.
Yeah.
The Australians, they like us.
Oh, no wonder we're pandering to them and their disgusting food.
How about our friends over in Poland? They enjoy eating pierogies. Sauerkraut.
I don't
soup.
Know if they eat rocks. I'm sorry. It's
and
an old joke.
Pork meatballs. Oh,
pork
that's
meatballs.
Not, yeah.
That sounds awesome.
I think. I don't know. Maybe I could live in Russia. They like caviar.
Yeah, but most people can't afford Russian caviar. They're eating blintzes and a
potatoes.
lot of beets. A lot of beets.
A lot of potatoes.
Potatoes, okay. Beets, not so much with
well,
me.
Well, we have got an amazing storyteller on tonight, you guys. Ed Krasnick is here, and he always has a good story to tell. But before we get to our storyteller, Ed Krasnick.
He does always have a good story to tell.
I did want to mention to you guys that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, and heck, why not? There's a couple of ways you can do that. Number one, if you need a website, you head over to GoDaddy. they're giving away websites and website hosting for $2.95 $2.95.
The code you put in is STORY295. That'll get you that price. That'll get us a little taste, and everybody will be happy.
And
then Danica, Patrick will come to your house and take off her top.
And I have to say, GoDaddy has a great new website builder. It's very simple. It's drag and drop.
Dragons? There are dragons? That's awesome.
And even if I can build a website, you guys, you can build a website. So don't forget, go over to GoDaddy.com, enter the promo code STORY295, and then you are in fact supporting our show.
Yes, and thank you for doing that.
That's right.
In advance.
All right, and what else can they do to support the show, Hannes?
Oh, they can go to StoryWorthyPodcast.com. They can donate money directly, which
that's
is
nice.
Always awesome. They can click on our Amazon link, and then you buy your stuff on Amazon, and with no extra cost to you, we get a taste of that.
That's right. You know, Amazon delivers food now. Did you know that?
By drone? Like, do they drop it down your chimney?
No, but it's like fresh food. Somebody in my apartment building ordered it the other day, and it's sitting right outside their door, like these fresh bags, like grocery bags, but it's from Amazon. And they're like heated.
If you're not there, do they leave it outside your door?
They leave it outside the door, but not heated, but what's the word when it's...
Insulated.
It's insulated. They're in insulated bags, and then boom, Amazon will bring your food to your house.
Because America's not fat enough. We need to... Like, you could at least go get the food. You fat, savory, loving bastard. But your wife is like, I want chocolate pudding. And you're like, I want a steak. But we're so fat, we're just like that movie with the guy with the robot. What was that movie? WALL-E, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, stay tuned because Ed Krasnick is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer Mark Miller.
And I will be talking about African tribes that worship Barbara Streisand's nose, an article I wrote for Weekly World News, and many others that you will not believe.
But you should, because you'll hear them next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Jackie Cation, and you're listening to Storyworthy. You've chosen wisely.
And we're back. We have indeed gone four doors down to the landmark lanes. Now, this is a very large cavernous thing. There are three full separate bars, an entire bowling alley, and an entire video arcade.
And I have just ordered the chicken pot pie and a Diet Coke.
They don't have chicken pot pie, but they do have scotch eggs.
God damn it.
And I'm going to go play the old original Terminator video game, which still costs a quarter here in Milwaukee. That's one.
And
of
I'll head
things.
Over to the Pac-Man machine because you remember how I used to love Pac-Man.
Yeah. Didn't you orgasm over Pac-Man
you
at some point?
You know, Hannes, I knew you were going to bring that up, but it's a true story.
You brought it up.
When I was a kid, I would play Pac-Man down at the ice cream store and have orgasms. There, I said it.
Wow. That were you sitting on Pac-Man?
No,
was he eating you?
But I did have my hand on the joystick. I did have my hand on the joystick, which was firm. And there was something about the boop, 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 that whole thing that just sent me through the roof.
Well, we're learning quite a bit. You know what often brings me to orgasm? Frogger. Oh, when I would leap. I would try and get, and then when I would finish, I would be hit by a truck. That's why I have the problems I have today.
I would play Asteroids, and when I got to was it called hydroplaning, right? No, it was called hyperspace. You hit hyperspace, and then it was like a different dong or a different ding, that was very exciting as well.
Usually a different dong will do it for you. That's what I hear.
Not for me, oddly enough.
Yes. Well, why don't you introduce our guest who
right,
is walking out the door as we speak.
Ed Krasnick is here right now. He is an Emmy-winning writer and a creator, performer, and producer and development executive. He created self-help comedy. Now, you may have seen Ed on Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Sopranos, Dancing with the Stars, and recently Ed was a writer show producer on the sitcom After Lately with Chelsea Handler. And right now he has a new book coming out called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Being Happy. And that should be very interesting. I'll say that. And you can find him on Twitter at Ed Krasnick. So, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Ed Krasnick.
Oh, wow, this is I can't say. You know, I've heard so many things. I still can't get my mind around the orgasming for Pac-Man, sure. And of course the dick thing. Which was for the spotted dick, yes. Which I was out the other day with binoculars, and I don't even want to say what happened. But it didn't involve orgasming. I tell you that right now. Well, I have a few things to talk about. I just got some bad news. So that is the beginning, the cue for me for comfort food. Because usually it does happen. My family made a beach movie in the 50s called How to Stuff a Wild Emotion. And here's what it is. It's people in bathing suits complaining about their future and basically stuffing bread down their throats. My mother was a bazooka bread gun. What she would do is she would shoot bread out of a cannon. Anytime you would put your hand up, you'd say, and I want to, and it would go right into my father's mouth. And his emotions were below sea level. They were not above sea level. They were below sea level. It was like a man was a belt, and then a lot of frustration was below that, and then there was bread. And that was it. There were no legs. There were no arms. How to stuff a wild emotion. Now, in my family, we had something called eating disorders. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it is a playground of shame. It is a lot of things. But so my mother was my family was amazing. My mother was a very funny person. My sister was a very funny person. But they had issues, and I had issues because I was in between them. It was an eating disorder sandwich, is what it was. And so the first thing that you have to know about, I guess we start at the beginning, which is the kitchen. So everything is centered in the kitchen, and the kitchen is done up in a beautiful harvest gold color. Everything in the kitchen matches. In the 70s, it had to match. It didn't matter what it could be eggplant, but your dishwasher has to be eggplant, your refrigerator has to be eggplant, you wear eggplant, everything has to match. So I think it was control issues is what it was. So we had a harvest gold, and I called it the harvest gold ballroom where people dance around their feelings. Because this is what happened. It's divided into different areas. I'll take you in right now. This is Randolph, Massachusetts. Well, Dorchester, Massachusetts in the 60s. Basically, where Ben Affleck picked Matt Damon up every morning. What you didn't see is that inside that apartment, I was there stuffing my feelings. It was Matt Damon. He went out to have a drink and hit people, and I was stuffing my feelings in the kitchen. Actually, in a cabinet. Now, so basically, the Harvest Gold Ballroom. So we have an area called Snack Cracker Alley. Snack crackers are loaded onto a carbohydrate conveyor belt. They are fed continuously to Jewish relatives who are sitting under a blanket of corned beef. And so my mother, my father, my sister, my uncle Carl, and Aunt Ida, their relationship was like Vietnam with cold cuts, married couple. And so everybody's there, and my mother is literally shooting bread, a bazooka bread gun, and bread is used as a pillow of suffocation for emotions. That's what it is in the family. So you have this kind of feeling. Now, you'd have a bagel, and then there'd be a bagel in the middle of the bagel. And then there'd be butter, and then another bagel. So people would wear it as a hat. If Mayor McCheese came into my house, he would be wearing a bagel as a hat. Mayor McCheese was Mayor McBagel in the house. So we had a lot of that. And I ate everything that was like that. I watched The Tonight Show as a little kid. I stayed up past, 11:30 midnight. I'm 8 years old. And I'm eating snack crackers and Wheat Thins. And that was the thing about comfort food for me was not so much, I would call it discomfort food. It wasn't comfort food. What it was is it was a way to keep things down. And so the thing that I liked to keep it down was bread and bread products. And usually not great bread. Some of them were good, but not pastries, but like Quaker 100% natural cereal. I don't know why, because I couldn't even allow myself the pleasure of a shepherd's pie. No, I had to have the Quaker, but it was volume. How do we do it? Volume. Everything must be kept down, its volume. So I would have stuff like that. I'd have the Swiss cheese crackers. I'd have cheese doodles. I'd have doodads, thingamabobs. My family crest is a man and a woman standing over a kitchen sink polishing off a box of ding-dongs. That is what this was about. So essentially, I started out eating that kind of stuff. And what would happen for me is I would eat until I couldn't move. And then I wouldn't move. And then I'd watch Mike Douglas, and then I'd watch The Tonight Show, and then I couldn't move. So it was like a kind of exercise program for a kid. It was eat a lot of bread, try to get up, don't get up, and then don't, and then get on to the Mike Douglas show. That's sort of what it was. It was a Russian roulette of bread. So I did this, and then in my teen years, I was a 14 husky, which means that I was a dog pulling a sled full of family problems. It means that I was a little chunky. I was chubby. And so my mother took me to a place called Izzy Braverman's Clothing Emporium for lonely, husky, insecure Jewish mothers who are wearing bagel hats. That's what it was. That's what it was. And it was a guy. It was like very stereotypical, very Woody Allen-ish. It was a guy named Izzy Braverman who wore thick Coke bottle glasses. Yeah. And if light just grazed the lenses, trees in the suburbs would explode. It was like a magnifying, and they would put me up on a pedestal, like on a thing, and no pant, nothing ever fit, and he would have theme sales for husky kids. So you'd have Husky Hoedown was a big, so it was a Western theme sale for kids who are uncomfortable to begin with. And then you'd be up there, and you'd be sort of wobbling like a weeble, and my mother, and he would pin me. He'd have pins in his mouth. He could recite Shakespeare from pins, like a human grenade. And then you would pull out the pin, and he would say things like, "Surely the problem is that we got that ass. That's the problem. The ass is our obstacle here. We have a problem, and that is called our ass." Now, and meanwhile, I'm up there with my GAF talking Viewmaster. "The Grand Canyon is the biggest canyon." I mean, it was like out of a movie. So this really happened. So now we have that is also part of the comfort food legacy of love. And then if you take that and you cut to years later as a starting stand-up comedy, I did it once. I got up on stage and I did it once in San Francisco. I was prepared. I was nervous, very nervous. And it was an open mic night. Now, I'll give you an example of an open mic night in San Francisco when I started. An open mic night is Nora Dunn, Rob Schneider, Dana Carvey, Bob Sarlat, Paula Poundstone, Jeremy Kramer, Jake Johansson. This is an open mic night. I went on 13th and did very well and then didn't do it again for 6 years. Why? I went back to comfort food. What happened was from that experience, I went back to my apartment, my in-law apartment in San Francisco, and I was on the parade route for dignitaries visiting San Francisco. There's a place called Seal Rocks, which is out on the avenues in the Richmond District. And I had an in-law apartment with like these shutter windows that you would open, like you'd be like an old grandmother with a teacup, and you could open a window. So going by my apartment was François Mitterrand, was the Prime Minister of France, was Deng Xiaoping from China. They were hanging out. They were going to Seal Rocks. I don't know why. And they go to Ocean Beach, and then they come back. So that was part of the San Francisco dignitary visit. Now, I am in my apartment, and when you're into comfort food and when you're trying to stop your feelings from happening and you don't get up sometimes, could go a month, 2 months, maybe you don't get out that much, but you'll get your snack crackers, you'll get your Quaker 100% natural, you'll get your bagel hats. And so you're sitting in the room, and all of a sudden I heard this engine going, and I looked out of my little shutter apartment windows, and I see French flags, and I see a big long limousine, and I see like motorcycles, on a patrolman, and they're flanking Prime Minister François Mitterrand is going to visit Seal Rocks. Now, I'm watching him, but in the background of my apartment, of course I had the TV on all the time, I'm hearing the theme song to Eight is Enough. Now, I've got Eight is Enough on, and I've got François Mitterrand in front of my apartment. Now, I've got a choice to make. What am I going to do? Am I going to watch the Prime Minister of France, who is waving at me, or am I going to see an episode of Eight is Enough with Quaker 100% natural cereal and a bagel hat? What did I do? Of course I go back to Eight is Enough, because I had only seen that episode 100 times. So you make the logical decision. And this is really the cornerstone of what I would call comfort food. Now, if you want to build the archaeology of comfort food in your comfort food home, which is called a body, what you do is you start with, let's just start coating with different kinds of cereal and cracker items. Let's just take a handful of Wheat Thins. Let's compile it with some kind of cheese cracker. Let's do cheese puffs. Let's do doodads. Let's do Rice Chex. You don't taste anything. There's no tasting. What you're doing is you're burying. You're burying. So if you're burying a body, you want to bury it under things. And so this is the start of the archaeology. Then you're looking at just bread products. Now you're looking at... Now, to give you an example of how much I was into bread, I changed my name to Bread Krasnick, which was which was on my license. Then when I would go to a movie... Like a double feature, I'd go in. I used to live in Brookline, Mass, and Coolidge Corner Cinema was a great cinema. And across the street was a deli that was called Jaffe's Pick-A-Chick. Jaffe's Pick-A-Chick had a big sign in the window: "Our party platters are gorgeous." Not beautiful, not delicious. They're gorgeous. And so they had the greatest bagels. They had these egg bagels. So I would go in to the bagel place, and I get a challah, a full challah, a braided challah. And, like, fresh out of the oven, and a dozen bagels. And then I would go sit in the balcony with a half a gallon of orange juice. and I would sit, and I would watch Catch-22 and Harold and Maude, and I would eat an entire thing of bread and whatever bagels I could stuff into my stomach. And I did that for a while. Now, I didn't gain... I wasn't one of those people that you'd see walking down the street, and it's like, is that a person or is that a building? I wasn't like that, but I'd gained a little bit of weight, but I felt awful. That's the thing. So my comfort food ended up to become discomfort food, which is always the way with comfort, is that anytime you're trying to comfort and you're not facing what you need to face, there's pain. You know, wherever there's comfort, there's pain. And that's my bumper sticker. Did not sell as well as I had hoped. Did not sell off the shelves. No, it wasn't Forrest Gump. It wasn't Life is a Box of Chocolates. Yeah. It was wherever there's comfort, there's pain. And people would tell me, the marketing experts, they'd say, maybe you should change it. And I'd say, no, I think it's more important to get this message out. And then I had a scented one that was wherever there's comfort, there's shame. And I changed it to shame, and it wasn't as good. Anyway, so this is when I think of comfort food, those are the kinds of things I think of. Now, I also would say, when you said shepherd's pie, I love shepherd's pie. And if I lived in the UK, I would be, you know, they'd make a rhyme about me. I wouldn't be Simple Simon, I'd be Shepherd's Pieman. And I would be, and other things, and other stories is what it would be called. And so so I love stuff like that. I love potatoes and I love, but now, surprise, I'm King Gluten Common. I can't have gluten. And I'm not one of those fashionable gluten people. I'm not like, yeah, I'm just trying to stay off it, or, you know, it's really bad for you. I'm like, I can't have it because I buried my feelings in bread. And so that's, so then I started having feelings and I had less bread. And so then there was an excavation. People were going down in the mine and they were saying, what's down there? And they say, I don't know, I just see a lot of bread. And then they'd say, what's beyond it? Well, there's a lot of anger down there, I suppose. Really? Can you identify it as anger? Not as such. Too much bread. So I think that as I started doing that, I started realizing why I had all these like allergies and why I felt the way I felt. Because I was an actor. I am an actor. And I'd go on these shows and I'd make this face like I was Mr. Ed with my ears, because my ears were blocked up because I was allergic. I didn't know it. So I would look on camera, and I was like on The Sopranos, and I'm on camera, and I'm like, it looks like I'm chewing tobacco in New Jersey with a bread hat. I don't know why. I don't know why. Is that man a duck? What is he? Is he a human being? So then I went and I had a blood test, and I learned that I had too much bread. And I was dating somebody at the time who said to me, you know what I think? I think that you've had so much bread that I think it's like a film that can cover your brain. I think your brain is covered in bread, a film. And I said, are you trying to compliment me? Because it doesn't feel like it. So that didn't last, and the bread didn't either. And that's basically the story of comfort food.
I love that. The comfort, yeah, what you comfort yourself with often will end up poisoning you. Some people drink too much.
I mean, sugar. You know, this is poison, basically sugar. And please keep eating it. No, but I mean, it really is, but... No, everything
sugar
in moderation.
Is like, yeah, sugar is a really dangerous thing. They're finding more and more out about sugar and how it affects the brain. I recently saw something about how your brain looks on cocaine and how it looks on sugar, and it's really identical. So when you're intaking sugar, you may as well be snorting cocaine.
Yeah, I don't know when it started. I don't know if there was like a guy in Hawaii, you know, it was called the Sandwich Islands again, but I don't know whether they were having sandwiches, but there was a guy with a machete and he was saying, this tastes really sweet. I don't know what it was.
The sugar cane.
The sugar cane. And I don't know if he said, you know, cane, cocaine. maybe there's a connection.
Well, the thing with sugar is they're finding out and they're giving us more information about it. Like a can of soda, like a can of Coca-Cola has as much sugar as like, you know, it would be like as if you go to a diner and you're pouring out the sugar container. That's how much sugar is in that Coke.
Oh, excuse me just a second. Of course. This is my therapist calling.
Okay.
And there's a beeping that says, and that's a great, it's always great to have a Calypso ringtone. Because when you have a Calypso ringtone, you think, hey, life is a party.
Life is a party. I want to hear Robert Mitchum.
Oh,
but that was
the
thing.
IRS.
I was just watching on, Antiques Roadshow.
Oh,
and they had this
beautiful
antique like desk thing that you could lock. And it was called a sugar desk or something like that. It was like sugar was so valuable that you would lock it in your desk. So it used to be hard to get because it was... You know, and now it's like
because
we have
it's
it in everything. It's everything.
It's
we're
corn.
Making corn syrup, which isn't even fucking sugar.
Right.
Right.
I mean, it is, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're just eating. I mean, it used to be you had to chase after red meat. You know, we're built to chase red meat, finally kill it, and then we eat it. And every 3 years, we would find sugar somewhere.
Well, that's why sugar's at the top of the food pyramid, isn't it? It's the one you have in least consumption.
Right,
you should have
exactly.
the least amount of sugar. However, at the bottom, you do find things that rise, which is bread. Or no, maybe
that's
the bottom
old,
is
that's
fruits
the old
and
pyramid.
Right.
No, the old pyramid was the biggest part was
carbohydrates.
Bread, carbohydrates, and now they've changed
they've
that.
They've changed
around.
That. But you enjoy things that rise.
Well, I do enjoy things that rise, even though I don't. I enjoy things that rise. We're just coming out of Hebrew sweeps, so we just have a matzah hootenanny at the house.
Right. I have to say, by the way, that I just saw Ed literally yesterday. I was on Netflix, and I see this documentary called When Jews Were Funny. And Jews Funny, always something I'll watch, and it turns out to be a documentary. And who comes up? Ed Krasnick.
Oh,
I'm
I
like,
didn't
hey,
you're in that documentary.
Hi, Ed Krasnick.
I was in that documentary. I had a great time in that documentary. I have no idea what happened. A man said things in a low voice, and I listened to him. And
what is
questions.
It about, Hannes?
It's about it? Trying to figure out. The thing about it is, I entertain because Mark Maron is in it, Jack Carter is in it, Gilbert Gottfried is in it, a lot of people. But it's like the guy has a vague idea of. Are Jews naturally funny, or why are we funnier than other people? But he's kind of all over the place, and he keeps trying to explain the premise, not in a joking way, to the people he's interviewing, who are all kind of looking at him like, I'm not really sure what you're going for here.
Yeah.
And it just ends up being a lot of stories about old Jews or old Jewish jokes, and that's the kind of thing that I love.
Well, I love seeing you on television anytime, Ed Krasnick. So I will watch that regardless.
Oh, you should watch it. No, it was very
entertaining.
You know, one of my favorite jokes with the baby who is, you know, there's a three-year-old on the beach, and a wave comes and drags him out to the sea, and the grandmother is there, and she wails to God, please, I know I've been a bad Jew, but please, whatever, if you can find it in your heart, I'll go to the synagogue every day. If you can please return my grandchild to me. And a wave comes up, and it deposits the grandchild at her feet, perfectly unharmed, and she looks up at the sky, and she goes, he had a hat.
Oh, man.
It's like that's the typical Jewish joke.
Woman was my grandmother.
That's right.
And that was
he had a bagel hat.
He had a bagel.
That was the version that she told. He had a bagel hat.
Let me ask you, because I eat one bagel, and that's very filling to me.
It is very filling.
But so you're saying you would eat not only the entire challah bread, but then you'd eat bagels on top of that.
Well, I would because I had to make a sandwich.
But that's so much bread.
No, that's a lot of bread. I know. I think that you talk about comfort food. I think that there were just a lot of things. I was like David Jansen in The Fugitive. And I will do references older than that today.
No, that's
I will start with that,
do
and
it.
I'm going backwards.
No, we love the podcast gold. We love, you know, between David Jansen and The Fugitive and pot roasts inside a slow cooker.
Yeah.
The kids are flocking to us.
No, you're learning. Go and look at, you know, my attitude is look it up. Yeah. I yell it like that.
Yeah,
I'll
now you take your goddamn...
Kids
you take,
really like that
you take
approach.
Your phone.
Look it up. When you yell it in their face,
I say, my daughter is 9, and I will say to her, I want you to look... Nuclear disarmament. Look it up. And so it's not really the greatest
well,
way to
parent.
Well,
you know, it's interesting you brought up your daughter because I just wrote right here, the way that you feed your child is the way you should eat, Ed.
Well, you know what? You're right about that. Now, you being a mom, you know that you give your kids this kind of balance. You're very careful about it. And it's like, where was that when I was a kid? I just think my parents were asleep for a lot of the time.
No, I don't think they had as much information.
No, there was
back
no
then.
Information.
They didn't have the information.
And they were trying to, you know, they were trying to take care with what was available at the time. They didn't know any of this stuff. And I have a feeling that like 10 years from now, they will know things like, you know, about sugar and about what's good for you and about how to balance your diet and
right.
things like that.
Well,
yeah, it turns out we all need twice as much gluten as we think we do. Or so it'll be some weird reverse thing.
How long have you been gluten-free, as it were?
About like 8 years, I think.
Really? That's a long time. So you were gluten-free before it was fashionable.
Yeah, people would look at me and they'd say, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, get yourself a piece of bread.
Yeah, and I'd say, well, I have to explain. And then I'd try to go into an explanation. It wouldn't work.
But now, I was in Trader Joe's the other day and I saw literally gluten-free water. I mean, what is that? Come on.
Well, that's a product that I've been marketing, and I'm trying to come up with a good slogan for it. And it says, "You need it to live." Why is it so bad? Now, maybe that's a too
now,
long
how
a catchphrase.
I want to see your picture with a finger pointing out with a big screaming headline. It says, "Look it up!
Look it up!" That's right.
That's your slogan.
Look it up line.
Look it up
brand.
Ed, here's my question.
Yeah.
Why did you get on stage that first time in San Francisco? I mean, I heard you always wanted to be on Mike Douglas. You must have always wanted to be an entertainer. What got you on the stage in San Francisco? And then was it truly one performance and then you didn't go up for 16 more fucking years?
6 years.
6 years.
That's true.
So what happened?
You know, I think I just got sidetracked with my own, you know, I had some issues, personal issues, you know, just adjusting to everyday life.
But you got up on stage.
Yeah. I prepared, which I'd never prepared since, basically,
right.
obviously. So I got up on stage and I had note cards and I had jokes and I had an act.
But it wasn't a disaster. It worked okay.
It worked well. And in fact, people said, who are you?
But then I don't understand. Then why did you put it away for 6 years?
I didn't enjoy it.
Wow, Ed, that doesn't sound... That's so crazy coming from a comedian.
Well, I think a lot of comedians feel that way. For me, it's not that I never liked doing comedy, because I did. I did like performing. But what I liked more is a sense of community amongst the comedians.
Yeah,
what
I agree
liked
with
more
that.
Going
I was
out
always,
afterwards.
Well, you talked
yeah,
about all those people
I agree with that
were
completely.
On stage that night. I mean, didn't that give you comfort right there? Like,
it
this
did.
Is these are the people I want to hang with.
It did. It did. It's just that, you know, I had you know, my own issues. For me, it was a lot about learning how to be my own person and separate from my family. I was very tied into my family emotionally.
I was also like that, actually, myself.
So it took me a while.
It does take a while. It's a process.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that it took you 6 years to get back up on stage.
Well, I lived very far from the club.
Oh, I see.
And I didn't have a car.
And there was always a dignitary outside blocking the street.
That's right. And there was a lot of Eight Is Enough to watch.
If it wasn't for Francois and Mitterrand.
Eight Is Enough. The oldest girl, her name was Nancy. Remember?
Yes, I love Nancy.
But she was like the mother.
She was about the same age as the mother.
I know.
Yes.
I hated that part. Like, she was so serious and mature, and I always wanted to see the younger kids.
I know.
That's because you were the youngest, and your older sister was so much older than you.
Yeah, and we have 8 people in my family. I thought I could be plugged right in there. That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's a show. I watched a lot of shitty TV.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever watched that.
Well, maybe you need
it. Is enough to fill our lives with love.
There's magic in the early morning we found.
Yeah. Hang on.
Yeah. That is so great, Ed. Can you sing one more line, please?
As the sunrise smiles on everything around, there's a plate of homemade wishes on the kitchen windowsill, and 8 is enough to fill our lives with love. Yes, more than enough to fill our lives with love.
And then I think some of the kids died, and then the show ended.
Really, they killed off a couple
apart.
Kids, and then they said, well, that looks nothing
it
like our
apart.
Other son.
Yeah,
and nobody said anything. Oh, there's a new mother. Oh, she doesn't even have the same name.
Now, that
they used to do that all the time. They would just replace characters.
My favorite thing, I had my mentor, Norman Steinberg, great writer. Norman Steinberg wrote My Favorite Year,
Swede?
Blazing Saddles, no, Mr. Yeah. All these movies.
Oh, wow.
And he wrote a show called The Ellen Burstyn Show. Now, they had so many problems with Ellen Burstyn that Les Moonves came in and said, we're going to keep the title, we're going to get rid of her. But he really meant it. He wasn't kidding. Who's going to know?
Ellen Burstyn, she's a heck of an actress.
She's a great actress.
An amazing actress.
Absolutely
insane. Was this like a sitcom show?
Yeah, it was a sitcom.
See, now she was a dramatic actress. I hate that when they're like, was she funny? Because if you're not, you know, it's like they take people.
She was, but she was surrounded with, imagine this, Elaine Stritch played her mother. Megan Mullally was her daughter.
Holy crap.
And Barry Sobel was her son.
So she was really like that character in Requiem for a Dream.
In a way.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was really.
She was surrounded by people who were top-notch comedy actors.
Right, and fighting with them and stepping on their lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. But no. But what does he call it? He says, lady, you're what we call heavy furniture.
Wow.
Which I love that line.
Yeah, I like that line too. Yeah, you're heavy furniture.
You're heavy furniture.
Yeah, I can't budge.
Not
with you.
Tiny furniture.
No.
Like what's her name? Like Lena
Dunham.
Like
that movie, yeah.
Right. Wow, that's a good term. I like that.
Heavy furniture.
I'm light as a feather, ladies and gentlemen. Light as a feather.
She
and easy to move
light.
Around.
And she's very,
is
light.
Very light. I'm very flexible.
You pretend darkness, but you're very light.
He's very light.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
You
thank
believe
you.
In love.
Thank you. By the way, Ed, speaking of lightness, Ed is so slim that the idea that he once ever ate 8,000 pounds of bread at a time is amazing.
It's right on my page, Hannes. I wrote that note as well.
Yeah.
When were you husky then, just as a teenager?
As a teenager. And
this ass was the problem.
That was. That's right. It was our obstacle.
Yeah.
I had periods of time when I would eat, I'd be very uncomfortable, and I couldn't get out. I couldn't circulate.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister who's 7 years older, great actress.
Oh,
really
no kidding.
Brilliant.
Interesting. Yeah. What's her name?
Rochelle.
Uh-huh. Name is Ellen
is it
Burstyn.
Krasnick as well?
No. Yeah. And she, it's Burstyn.
Yeah.
No, she's very talented. And and the kind of person who can read from a paper and make you cry.
Oh, wow.
Like, she does everything like it's so real.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I love that.
And she's like, why don't you just act like you talk? You know, just say it, which is to be real. And I'm like, I see a camera and I see a script and I'm like, anyway, I'll be right back. Hello, everybody.
Very hard to do. Do you have any recommendations for people on how to act natural and not do what you just said?
Breathe. Take a breath before you do anything.
Take a breath. I like that.
Take a breath and go as slow as you think you're going, go slower.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard
I was
that
working
before,
with Judge Reinhold once. I'm working with him and I'm like looking at him and I'm thinking, why is the, it seems really slow to me.
Yeah.
And then when I saw it on film, it was exactly the right
speed. The right pace.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. You can't go slow enough. And you can't go slow enough in comedy. And people would never believe that.
Well, that's
the
what
slower you go, the better it is.
That's a really great tip. And I could use that myself because I often speed through things due to nervousness.
Me too. Look
and
at what I just said.
And you want to get the laugh.
Slow the train down. What
slow
happens
the
is
train
when
down.
You slow the train down, it becomes a local. And then people can get on it.
Oh, man, I love that.
And that is my next bumper story.
Right, now we have to explain to the people in 25 what a train is. A train was a machine that you would use to get into the city from the suburbs.
What would Strom Thurmond call a train? A machine.
A machine, yeah. He was the guy who was like, my microphone machine.
Machine.
He's not.
That's right.
Do you have any weaknesses now for food?
No, I wouldn't say weaknesses. I just say I eat really fast.
Oh, now see, that's terrible. You're supposed to be, like you said, tasting
slow
your food.
Down.
Tasting your food and understanding what you're putting, like what are the taste buds, what's happening in your mouth, and as you swallow and take your time with it, right?
Well, that's why I need to move to Italy. I traveled in Italy. It was one of the only places that I really took time to travel, and I went there for like a month.
Yeah.
And I just went around the country. I had no plans. I had no anything.
Wonderful.
And I'd sit for 3 hours and have a meal. And people would invariably, like I'd meet people. I was sitting and having a meal in Venice and I hear, excuse me, is carpaccio? She's yelling across the room from me.
Yeah.
Is carpaccio? I said, si. She said, oh, you have to have lemon on carpaccio. She came from the table in the back of the room and took a lemon and squeezed it on the carpaccio. And she said,
you
are from Venezia? I said, no, I'm traveling. She says, I will show you Venezia. I will show you tomorrow. I will meet you in Piazza San Marco. I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I need to be that person. I lived in North Beach in San Francisco with two Italian roommates, Lella and Bianca. and they ate Nutella.
Come and knock on our door.
It really was.
Nutella is very bad for you. That's all sugar. Nutella is just
sugar. But they ate Nutella, and they drank wine every night and drank espresso, and they were thin, and they had no worries.
They had no bread.
But that's the only,
But they didn't worry about anything. They said, Ed, why are you? I'm sorry, but you cannot run around. I said, well, I have to go somewhere. I am sorry, but.
I've been to Italy and had like a 14-course meal. I mean, they eat forever.
But they don't eat fast.
They eat it slowly and they take their time.
And they
We have lives to lead and children to care for and money to make.
No.
No. What do you mean, Ed? I mean, who has time for a 3-hour meal? I mean, you were on vacation.
You don't have time. But the thing is, you think that you're missing all this great stuff.
Yeah.
And really, you're not missing anything because all that rushing around and all that panicking and all that other stuff, it doesn't bring you a quality of life.
Right. You know what? You could do it once a week.
More of the same.
If once a week you skipped the things you were going to do and you really concentrated, it would be helpful.
Well, that's what Sabbath is. That's what, like, not to be religious, but that's what people are supposed to stop. That's why it's built into religions.
Yes.
To stop.
Do you follow the Sabbath, as it were?
I don't follow it, although I do follow Black Sabbath.
Yes, exactly. I mean, now also gluten-free.
Here's not a lot something of people know that. Why I think your childhood was so magical, because you had a Viewmaster.
Oh.
A talking Viewmaster.
You know, this was the big thing. It was like they came out with a talking Viewmaster. You could put those slides in.
Right.
You didn't need iTunes.
Yeah.
If I gave my daughter a Viewmaster, she'd say, what is this?
We're not even going to try and explain to you kids what a Viewmaster is.
The thing is, if you get them started when they're young, like I had a Viewmaster for my daughter, and I had an Etch-a-Sketch, and she played with those.
Wait, my daughter does have an Etch-a-Sketch. I'll say that.
And it's really cool.
It works out well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really cool. Mr. Potato Head never gets old. Here's a man who can't face things because he has different faces.
Exactly. And oddly, he does not eat bread. Why? He is carbohydrate.
He is carbohydrate, and he writes the songs.
Hey, tell us a little bit about your book, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Being Happy.
Happened on the Way to Being Happy. I have been a student of self-help for many, many years. When I grew up, my basement was a self-help Library of Congress. My mother had, there was no title of a book. Yeah. It was always, I'm this and you're that.
Yeah.
You're great, and I'm going to be okay.
Women how are from you? Mars, men are from
men
Venus.
Men are from Venus. How to be your own best friend. Here's a man from Philadelphia. Be like him. I mean, all the titles were like those kind
we
of titles.
We needed one that said, don't eat bread, eat vegetables.
Right. There would be. But my family had all those books. And we would read.
And it was no help whatsoever.
No help whatsoever.
Because they weren't talking with you? So they have all the literature, but they don't have the actual
They went to therapy
words?
Before it was fashionable. No, oh. it just, it. Our part was hard. The incorporation. The assimilation. You know, you think Jews assimilation. Not so much. Not when it comes to happiness. But that was the difficult thing. And I can't remember. So the book is basically I studied all these different things. I studied with people who defy description. I studied with shaman. I studied with soothsayers.
No, you really did.
I really did. And so I would go, because I was fascinated by it. I would go to anything. So what happened is I ran out of money. And I couldn't pay anyone anymore. And so what I did was I had to go back into my own background and take a look at all the stuff that these people have been telling me all throughout the years and try to practice them.
Right.
And so this book is like it's like a workbook where I go back and I try to practice all the stuff while talking to other famous, funny people about how they get through life and how they've problem solved.
I love this. Now, wait, is it almost like an artist's way where you really do participate in the book?
Yes.
I love that.
With interviews with Larry David,
and
with
how
people,
did they get
with people,
it?
How they solve problems.
That's terrific.
So it's kind of a cool thing.
I love this idea, this book.
Yeah, it's a fun book.
All right.
A fun book. You know, and it's edible. So it's not biodegradable, but
it is
made
you know,
bread.
It is printed on bread.
It is
that
bread.
Is the thing.
It's not, and
it is a gorgeous
Ed wants,
party
Ed
plot.
Wants the message inside you.
Ew.
Literally.
You have dirty. To, when I say digest, I'm not talking about reading.
Yeah, exactly.
I never talk about reading when I say digest. Readers. Eating digest.
Right. Yeah. I don't even know if the audiobook comes in pill form.
Well, it comes in smell-o-vision.
Oh, okay.
And smell around.
Listen, I have to say, I still am so impressed that you were on The Sopranos. I mean, not impressed, but I'm so happy that you got to do that because I rewatch The Sopranos about twice a year. I watch the whole goddamn series over.
It's
and
really
every time
fun.
I see you on that stage doing the comedy, and I remember you telling me about that day.
Yeah.
And how everybody on set remained in character.
That's right.
And they knew they were making gold.
That's right. No, they didn't think anybody else would like it. They liked it, but they didn't think it. And what would happen is the way they'd sit, because the guy who welcomed me was Dominic Chianese, who played Uncle Junior.
Wow.
And he said, Eddie, come on over here. What do you like to eat? Do you like Lorna Doone? Do you like Twix? Whatever you want, they got it here. Whatever you like Lorna Doone?
He said, I like bread.
I said, I like bread.
Where
so they said,
bagels?
Come over here. Where are the bagels? Where's the hat? And he said, this is Jimmy Gandolfini. Eddie, meet him. He's going to be with us.
Wow.
How you doing?
Yeah, he's a friend of us.
He's going to be with us.
Wow.
Lorna Doone. But they had a tent, and I'll never forget this. The older actors ate with the older actors, and the younger actors ate with the younger actors. So you have, under a tent in a nursing home in New Jersey, you have Nancy Marchand, Dominic Chianese, and I think Gandolfini ate with them. And then you have the other kids, Michael Imperioli, and Tony Sirico, and all those other guys. So it was like there was a respect for the older actor on The Sopranos.
It was almost like Thanksgiving. There's the older table, the younger table, the child's table.
It really was.
I never liked Meadow. Never a big fan of her.
I didn't work with her. Yeah. Michael Imperioli a little bit. I mean, they're very...
But I think that that's just a tough character, because actually it's like the character had to actually be a pretty awful person to stand out in that group.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To be interesting. If you were not a psychotic...
Like Stephen Van Zandt.
Yeah. It's like, if you're the daughter, it's like you're just trying to be a normal person in this weird circumstance.
I loved AJ.
That's because he was out of his fucking mind.
Great character. David Chase, really, he told me that he said, I started looking at this show and I was like, I tried to write them nicer. There was a period of time where I tried to write them nicer, and then I realized these are not nice people.
Yeah.
Wow.
He said, and he grew up with all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, his mother really was Livia Soprano.
Wow.
So he really created
this world. Strange
to
think that Nancy Marchand is gone and James Gandolfini is gone.
No.
And it's strange.
It's horrible because they were, you talk about people who really were proud to be actors and loved their craft. Nancy Marchand was dying for like 2 years. She pulled around an oxygen tank. She would pull it around.
I never knew that. Yeah.
And she had a mask on. And she would pull it around because she was very sick. And yet she would work 12-hour days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was an actress.
Because the lights come on and you do what you do.
You're an actor.
Hannes, you always talked about that with Don Rickles, I think.
No, the story I heard... Well, yeah, with Don Rickles a couple of years ago, they did a documentary about him. And you see him, he looks very old.
Right.
And he's kind of just sipping tea in
his
big bathrobe.
Room.
And he looks tiny in the bathroom. And they start up that music, and he comes out with the mic and the tuxedo, and it's like, boom, it's Don fucking Rickles.
Well, that's performing. I remember Milton Berle. I used to be chairman of membership of the Friars Club here in L.A. And I used to hang out with Milton Berle in the afternoon. And so Milton Berle and his writer would be sitting on either side, and we would be watching a big TV screen watching baseball games. And, of course, he would lob jokes over my head. He would say, like, horrible jokes.
Yeah.
Buddy, what did we used to call Joan Collins when she first got to town? And then he'd look at him and he'd say, the British Open. And he'd go like this. He'd go like that. He'd put his hand on his thing and he'd make a buck tooth thing. He was an amazing guy, but he looked really old because he was. And then if I brought in somebody to meet him, hey, Jeff Garlin, hey, Janine Garofalo, this is Milton Berle.
Yeah.
And I'd introduce them, and he would get up out of his chair, and he'd start doing routines.
Wow. Yeah.
This 90-year-old man.
Ed, you've led you've had so many great, interesting career moments, and you continue to. And I feel like you're right in this pack of people we're talking about.
God, I hope that you're right. I've always felt part of it, and they've always made me feel part
of it. You are a part of it.
And I think that now it's actually time to maybe do some fun things and enjoy it. Maybe.
Well, now that you're on Story
enjoy
Worthy,
things.
I mean, everything's
No, we don't care for that kind of behavior.
I'm telling you, it happens now. That's my new catchphrase.
That and look it up.
Look it up.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Story Worthy?
Sure.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Bankrupt. No, wait a minute. Here it is. Virginity. Wow. I don't know where to start with it. You say 1 minute? That's about what I have. Okay, 1 minute. Okay. I lost my virginity after doing an impression of Woody Allen. What happened was I was this is the first thing I ever had in college. I was meeting my new roommate, and my roommate said, I'll let you be my roommate, but do you do any impressions? And I started doing Woody Allen. And so he said, you know, I don't do many impressions, but I do, you know, I'll do a few occasionally. And so I did Woody Allen, and she said, okay, you can be my roommate. And across the hall was a woman who was overhearing the Woody Allen impression. Yeah. And one thing led to another. And Eureka! And I'll see you at the premiere.
Wow.
Look it up! Look
it up. That is terrific.
Yeah.
And how old were you?
I was 17.
Wow, that's a nice age to lose your virginity.
And oddly enough, the girl was 12.
She was 12.
It was a Woody Allen impression.
I kid,
I kid. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
I learned the truth at 17, and that's what I learned.
Yes.
I'm more mature than some of the people I date.
I think that 17 and 18 are good ages to lose your virginity. There, I said it.
I'm glad you said it.
No, yeah. But
13. 13's a little young.
Yeah, 15, no good. 16, no good.
Well, if you remember the Jerry Lee Lewis School of Dating,
yes,
you would meet...
Your cousin.
And then you start dating her, and she was like 14. Or
you're, as Woody Allen, your stepdaughter, you know, whatever.
I don't know what happened. I mean, look, I'm never going to apologize for Woody Allen, but I'll say this one time.
Say it.
Nobody else has six masterpiece films. I don't care what, I don't like what he did. I'm a parent. I don't know what he did, really.
Yeah.
But he's out of his mind.
Yeah.
Okay? But he's a film genius. He's out of his mind, but he's a film genius.
It's
Frank
true.
Sinatra? Out of his mind.
Yeah. Right.
One of the greatest singers in the history of music. Out of his mind. One of the greatest. Now, when I listen to a Frank Sinatra a song, I don't think the guy's out of his mind. I think, wow, what a great voice.
Right.
When
and
I watch a Woody Allen movie, I think, wow, he's. When I watch Manhattan or Crimes and Misdemeanors or Hannah and Her
or
Sisters.
Or Blue Jasmine, for God's sake.
Or Blue Jasmine or Midnight About, or any of these movies.
Blue Jasmine was my favorite film of last year.
Well, great performances.
Amazing.
I think, see, you know, he's a really talented
guy. What we're forgetting is that we happen to be in a time where we know these people are alive while we're alive, so we know about all their foibles. But, you know, Leonardo da Vinci and Rembrandt and Shakespeare, we don't really know how fucking crazy they were. All we have is the art.
Right.
That's all that's left.
That's
and
right.
we just, and it's like, so Frank Sinatra... We know, you know, we know these things because we happen to be here. They're always crazy, and it's like, if you decide not to look at art by crazy people, then you're never going to look at art.
Well, it's like Bill. It's like the great, the great Bill Hicks, a very good friend, and I opened for him a lot.
Yeah,
and he used to do that.
Look him up, kids. Look it up,
Bill Hicks, especially.
Yeah.
Excuse me. He'd say, you know, all those movies. You don't think that all the greatest music was made by people on drugs?
Sure.
He said, you know all those records and CDs and things you like? Go out and burn them. Because all those people who made that music, real fucking high on drugs.
Yeah.
He would do that. And
yeah,
then he'd talk about,
but that wasn't, you know, molesting somebody or raping somebody or committing a crime.
Right.
That you know of.
Right.
No, I mean,
it could have led to other things.
It's just a tricky thing.
If you listen to people who are around those people, you hear some interesting
stories. I love
Mackenzie
Phillips' book, by the way. I think it was called High on Arrival. In her book, and she talks about sleeping with her father, but she talks about it like, oh, you know, a lot of people do this. A lot of people sleep with their fathers. It just happens.
She's an amazing person.
I bet she
really
is.
Really amazing.
But, I mean,
talk about fucked up.
I mean, my gosh.
No, there's some horrible things going on, and there's no excuse for it. And it's, you know, we don't know, except for
the fact that Mia Farrow's daughter wrote a letter and said so. So there's kind of like, there's that. Do you know what I mean?
Listen.
And I know I can remember things that happened to me when I was 10, 12 years old. Or how old was she? 8, 9? Whatever she was. I mean, I can... And my daughter's that age now. I mean, so
yeah,
I could see how impactful...
No,
it's hard to justify.
There's no justification.
But I do love his movies.
Yeah.
It's like I'm trying to decide about, you know, I'm really excited about this X-Men movie is coming out. And now Bryan Singer, the director, is being accused of all sorts of terrible things and child molestation. It's like, and I don't know whether it's true or not, but it's like, am I not going to go see the movie? I don't know if I'm not going to go see
tricky,
a movie
right?
if I decide that I think he did this because I really like the X-Men. So it's like, well, there's morals, but I'd like to be entertained for 2 hours.
You know,
so,
I stole a hamster in seventh grade from Woolworths, and you guys are listening to Storyworthy.
You stole a hamster from
Woolworths.
That's
exactly right. I put it in my pocket with the little chips hanging from its feet. Yes, I did.
Was the wheel in there, too?
There was a wheel. It was a hamster wheel. It was not the story where the wheel of truth. That's a different
wheel. In your defense, you were at the luncheonette, and it came across your plate. So that is
breaded hamster was one of their best dishes.
Ed Krasnick, you are such stuff. A talent. And I,
a luncheonette,
so
kids, was,
thank
look it up.
You. I love being with you guys. It's a pleasure, and,
really,
and I love the show.
I'm excited for your book. A funny thank thing you. Happened on the way to being happy.
Thank you.
And all of your self-help experience. I think this is great.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you. And I've really had a good time, and I'm going to go put my bagel hat on and drive my bagel thank wheel you. Car.
I'm going to put on my Kaiser Roll pants.
Dirty.
Which are good.
You
good.
Are on a roll with your
yes,
pants. My
yes,
God.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow.
You know what you don't want to wear is a rye shirt because the seeds will irritate your skin.
I've had that, and I have the shop. Look it up.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap
thank
it up
you so
right
much.
Now. I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick, Roddy Swearengin, and Anthony Bench. Where is Anthony Bench?
Not here,
ladies and gentlemen.
And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song.
He and Anthony
Follow
Bench
me.
Have gotten a bungalow in West Hollywood. That's all I can say. That's all. Look, and, hey, I don't judge. It's Hollywood, baby.
And on
they're
behalf
artists.
Of our storyteller tonight, Ed Krasnick, and of course, Johannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.